There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
This man covered so good, he better have his own cell phone service. The man's so good, they better give him his own jail. Called Jaylen Tolley, because these receivers are on 24-hour lockdown. If you check his pocket, he got 8 master locks in his pocket. They're on lockdown all season. The man, the myth, Jalen Ramsey.
Y'all know what it is.
Work man, yeah, that's him.
Y'all know what it is.
It's time to get this money.
The man, the myth, is Tim Hasselbeck.
That's true.
And Victor Cruz, Diana Rossini. Listen, we got some money, too. Everybody wants in on that.
Listen, bag of money here.
What was up with the crowd? There's like
a lot of
people there.
I'm
not even sure.
Yeah, you think he was disappointed at all the antics? And he's like, hey, damn it, I got 3 people. All right, listen, coming up today on NFL Live, Adam Schefter will join us with details on Melvin Gordon's decision to hold out. Shelly Smith is with the Chargers, and she will join us as well. Odell Beckham has joined his new teammates as the Browns go back to work. Josina Anderson talks with Beckham about the season ahead and the biggest adjustment so far. As for training camps, the Broncos and Falcons are the only teams practicing as of today in advance, the Hall of Fame game. On August 1st, they get an early start. 18 other teams, full squads, report to camp today and start practice tomorrow, while all 32 teams will be in training camp by the end of the week. And we've got you covered. We have coverage with 8 teams, reporters spread across the country representing the Patriots, the Jets, the Browns, Chargers, Colts, Giants, Packers, and Panthers. But we start with this news today from Adam Schefter. Melvin Gordon, who we know is looking for a new deal, informed the Chargers today that he will, in fact, opt out of training camp when the rest of the team reports. The team begins practicing tomorrow. And so now the Gordon watch begins in earnest. The side's apparently not close to a new deal. Gordon is scheduled to make $5.6 million this season. And we start our camp coverage with Shelly Smith this afternoon at Chargers training camp in Costa Mesa, California. And Shelly, the obvious question is here, what more can you tell us about Melvin Gordon's decision?
Not a whole lot, Wendy. We know he's not here at the practice facility. We also know that he's not 2 miles away where they're going through conditioning exercises right now. There's no practice, but they are doing some conditioning work. We know he's not there. We know he's not there beyond that. We don't know a whole lot. As you said, he's due $5.6 million, and every day that he holds out from training camp, the team could fine him up to $40,000 per day. That's a lot of money.
Shelly, thank you. There was speculation that Melvin Gordon might hold out, but then at certain points, Adam Schefter thought, you know what, maybe we don't know for sure. There was back and forth. But again, reports indicating that the two sides are not close. Smart decision, Tim. Only decision.
I've probably established a track record of supporting the players when they've outplayed their contract and want more money. Melvin Gordon's played 16 games once in his career. He's averaged over 4 yards per carry throughout a season only once in his career. They pick up the 5th-year option. There's obviously also the opportunity that you could franchise him. I'm not really sure what type of leverage that he has. I really don't. And so, you know, they can fine him 40 grand a day. I don't see the Chargers caving on this one, especially when you just look around and you just look at their roster, for that matter, and Austin Eckler and the production that he had a year ago. So I'm not sure something gets done here with Melvin Gordon.
Victor, let me ask you this. And as former player, and I think everybody would agree, you should get all that you can get. Mm-hmm. And certainly the lifespan of a player on the field is short-lived. But Tim makes a good point about the leverage here. And at some point, don't you sit down with your representation, who you hope is pretty self-aware and has a good assessment of the leverage you really do have, and say, you know what, will we win here? You know, do we have a fighting chance of winning this standoff? And yeah. I'm not sure the Chargers will cave.
Yeah, you kind of have to weigh those things out, especially when you're thinking about holding out from your respective team and weighing out the balance of what leverage do I really have, and kind of do the pros and cons of what leverage do I have as opposed to what leverage don't I have. And I think what he's looking at here is just him as a running back, the market for running backs, the lifespan of an NFL running back. And he's seeing that and he's like, well, I put up these certain amount of numbers that look good, that compete with the Todd Gurley's of the world and things of that nature, and I should be compensated as such because of the lifespan of a running back is so short. So I think that's the leverage, well, maybe not leverage, but that's his mindset,
the thought process
that he has going into this. I have to strike now while I'm youthful, while I can still play at a high level, and while I can back up what I'm saying.
Yeah, and listen, that's probably is exactly what he's thinking about. But it's not like the Chargers don't know that that's what he's thinking as well. He's 26
right.
years old, so he'd play this season under his current contract. Then you would have the opportunity to franchise him. Then at that point, he's 28 years old, and you've really just had his rookie deal, you know, including the fifth-year option, plus a franchise year. And then at 28 years old, and you can kind of then see, all right, do we want a long-term investment in him? That's definitely what he's looking at. He doesn't want to wait till he's 28 years old. But if you're the Chargers, like, why rush to do this long-term deal with that position that, honestly, we just see kind of fall off the cliff just by the nature of what you're asking guys to do who play running back?
And important to note, talking to a Charger source today, he said we love him. He's just looking for $13-14 million. He's looking to be one of the highest paid running backs, and that's just not something that they're willing to do at this point. So in terms of like this team wants to bring him back, and he threatened them, you know, not threatened them, but mentioned them, like, trade me, do that. And they don't have to do that. He's under contract, so he will just could be continually fined $40,000.
Right, and it's an important distinction. Sometimes you look at these holdouts from afar and you think the Chargers don't like Melvin Gordon. The Chargers don't want to pay Melvin Gordon. That is not the case. The matter of how much, what's the value there, and where's our line in the sand? So, again, the Melvin Gordon watch now begins. Adam Schefter also reporting about another holdout Jaguars defensive end, Yannick Ngakoue, who is also looking for a new deal.
Yeah, Wendy, contract talks, they've broken down between the two. So they were talking and that kind of fell apart. So figure over the last three seasons, 29 and a half sacks we're talking. You know, he's not reporting to camp here. And from my understanding here, you know, he's got about $2 million left on his rookie deal here and he is willing to wait out. But in terms of the organization here, they are not moving on this at this point. So we're just going to have to see and wait and see what happens here.
Well, elsewhere around the league, the Cleveland Browns have gone back to work. That includes Odell Beckham Jr., who was traded from the Giants to the Browns during the offseason. OBJ telling GQ he felt disrespected by the trade, and he was asked on Tuesday at a youth camp why he keeps on talking about his former team, the New York Giants. My initial reaction was disappointment, he said. I felt disrespected, like everything I've done for them. This is me being honest. This team has not been good for the last 6 years, period. And now he answers the question about why he keeps talking about his former team.
The only time that I talk about it is when I get asked about it. So it's hard. You know, it's like I don't even know the word for it. It's like a double-edged sword. You know, I can't really... Like, I don't want to talk about it, but if I get asked about it, I feel like I have to answer the question. So I'm really ready to put it all behind me. I think everybody's moved on. I've moved on. They've moved on. It's just time. You know, this is where I'm at. I'm at Cleveland Browns now. This is my team, and I'm excited.
Josina Anderson is with the Browns. JoJo, I got to defend him on this one. We ask the questions. He is answering the questions we ask. And we certainly know a lot of big personalities with OBJ, Jarvis Landry, Baker Mayfield are all there, a part of this Browns team now. Why does Freddie Kitchens believe they can come together and be successful as a team?
Wendy, two words, and that is Baker Mayfield. And the fact that this Brown staff believes that Baker Mayfield is the unquestionable leader of this team. And that's from hearing that a Brown source told me recently that head coach Freddie Kitchens said in a meeting towards the end of mandatory camp to a staff that, quote, this team is going to go the way that Baker Mayfield goes, period. And that comes from Kitchens hearing some questioning before as to how Baker Mayfield handled his public comments on Duke Johnson's trade demands. But a Brown source said, listen, It's not Baker's age that takes away from him being a leader. It's his production that makes him a leader. And the fact that, listen, the difference with him is that you cannot take any BS to Baker Mayfield because he will call it out if he feels like you don't know what you're talking about. And that applies to the coaches, too. But earlier today, Kitchen said, listen, he's comfortable with Baker Mayfield being who he is.
No, Baker's going to be himself. He's not going to change for anyone. It doesn't matter. He's always going to tell you the truth. He's going to speak the truth. That's what I like about him. Baker knows what he's doing. He's not a guy that's just flying by the seat of his pants. I mean, a lot of people confuse him with somebody that doesn't know what he's doing. All right, he's not like that. Now, don't ever have a misconception about that. But I want everybody to be themselves. So, and then it's up to us to determine if we like that or not.
Matter of fact, while Kitchens also admitted that he's not yet sure what Odell's specific role is going to be, he also said, too, that he wants Odell to be himself as well because he feels like that's the best thing for Odell to also do to make plays, which also seems like it was something that perhaps was also discouraged while he played in New York. But maybe, Wendy, that's why we heard Kitchens just say now that he actually hopes that Odell invites him on his new YouTube channel that he announced yesterday. And, Wendy, I'm not so sure that that is something that we would have heard Pat Shurmur say last year.
It does seem like there's a different approach, Joe. The question is, will there be a different result? We'll have to wait and see on that front. It has certainly been quite some time since the Browns have won a division title, 26 years to be exact, the longest division title drought in the NFL. It is followed closely, though, behind the Lions, who haven't won a division in 25 years, and then the Buffalo Bills, who have not won one in 23. So 30 years since the Browns won their last division title. They are considered, I think, by some, by many, I guess, the favorites to win the AFC North, although I think that's putting the cart before the horse just a bit. Having said that, Victor, what's their biggest obstacle if they're to end that drought?
I think the biggest obstacle is obviously playing well, obviously is getting those wins that you want to get. But I think the biggest obstacle is for Freddie Kitchens and managing all these egos and managing all these players and understanding. I think the biggest thing for the players is understanding their roles. I think they're all there now and they're just getting to know each other and getting their roles situated. But I think once you figure out your role and understand who you are and what you provide to this team, it'll create somewhat everyone an understanding within everyone that understands exactly what's being asked of us, what's being asked of me individually, what's my job, and they can go out there and execute that to the highest of their ability.
I would say this too, Diana, I'm sorry, like it's one thing to say it and then you got to put it into practice, but I do like everything Freddie Kitchens says. I mean, he wants people to be who they are. He understands that a talented roster does not translate into wins necessarily. We've seen that before. What comes next is the big question.
Well, that was my thought when Justina was pointing out that Freddie Kitchens is accepting Odell Beckham. And, you know, she jokingly was saying about the YouTube channel, something that Pat Shurmur certainly wouldn't. I don't know a lot of winning coaches in the league that are part of their players' YouTube channels. I think that the styles may be different. And Freddie Kitchens right now, without having to go out on the field and coach this team in one game yet, can easily sit back and say, let's all let and allow our men to go out there and be themselves. But when you start to have the problems, when you have all these men going out there with their egos, with their need and desire to want the ball, and it doesn't work because, as we know, there's only one ball to go around, you can't be yourself. They're going to have to rein them in. And I just think right now we have to be optimistic. We've got to be hopeful. We understand that. But it's easy at this point right now. What Pat Shurmur had to face and what he had to deal with was a slew of different issues. And let's see how Freddie Kitchens can handle that before we can mock the comparisons between the two coaches.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest obstacle is you have all of these really talented players. We all agree on that. And this is what Victor's alluding to, is you need to create a culture of unselfishness. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way that you get these guys that are used to being the center of attention to not worry about being the center of attention and just worry about trying to be a good teammate and helping you win. And so I think that just the difference is that Freddie's approach has been like, rather than me telling you all the things you can't do and all the things I don't want you to do and all the things that are bothering me, like I'm going to act like it's okay and I'm going to embrace it and it's okay. But at some point, it just becomes a problem. I mean, that's what we see it all the time with guys. At some point, it just becomes an issue.
Well, other than the wins and losses, which is the only litmus test that matters, the second litmus test will be when there is a problem. And there will be. There is for every team and how that's handled and what the reaction is then. And I think that's just something we have to wait and see. Well, the long national saga has ended. Daniel Jones has agreed to his rookie contract with the New York Giants. He signed it late Monday and was able to join his team as they began training camp today. This was, of course, the likely conclusion to this. The Duke product, the last Giants draft pick to sign his rookie deal, but he is in camp and accounted for. And Sal Palantonio is there as well. He joins us now from East Rutherford, New Jersey, where he has the very latest with the New York Giants. Sal.
Wendy, this is definitely the most watched training camp in the National Football League, the most intriguing storyline. How do you replace an icon like Eli Manning with a rookie seamlessly, successfully? Well, the answer is very carefully. And I asked Pat Shurmur what he has learned about Daniel Jones in the last couple of months. Here was his answer. Listen to this.
I think it's important that he learns something new every day. A lot of what he's doing for the first time. And it's really a process. So you go from not even practicing against the defense to against your own defense, and then you put the pads on, and then you're involved in preseason games. And so just as we go through all the steps, see him have success. In my mind, he's exceeded expectations. We had more of the information about Daniel Jones than some of the people that have covered him. So we're less surprised about things than maybe some other people are, because we knew he could throw the ball, we knew he could move around, we knew he was smart, we knew he was tough. So we knew all those things, and he hasn't disappointed us in any of those areas.
Clearly, when you listen to Pat Shurmur, the things that they impressed about with Daniel Jones: mobility, accuracy, maturity. Mobility is the key. Ability to slide inside the pocket, avoid the rush. They like that about him, but also his ability to tuck the ball and run. We also heard from Eli Manning, Wendy, and I got to tell you, I've been around Eli Manning his entire career. This guy is energized. He's fit. He's reinvigorated. He is recommitted to making sure that Daniel Jones has a very tough time supplanting him as the starter of the New York Football Giants.
Sal, thank you. A little competition, often good for us all. Cam Newton, however, in an entirely different situation. He's competing with himself to get healthy. He continues to recover from major offseason shoulder surgery, began throwing a few weeks ago, and has altered his throwing motion reportedly as camp begins. Here's the head coach.
All of his reps will be monitored. They'll be scripted out, and we'll just follow that pattern as we go through it. There will be a count, obviously. They're going to pay attention to the reps and see how he is the next morning every day. We believe he's ready to roll. He had a good off season. He had a good break from what we're being told. And, again, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll get to see tomorrow exactly.
Exactly.
Cam was a different quarterback after injuring his shoulder against the Steelers from week 10 to 15. Throws that went at least 15 yards. Cam only completed 38% of his passes, and his 5 interceptions tied for the most in the NFL. We're going to turn to Tim Hasselbeck now when we ask what you're looking for with Cam's throwing motion this summer now into the season, especially, Tim, given the reports that he's trying to tweak some things.
Well, I think first and foremost, you heard Ron Rivera, Wendy. He was talking about, limiting the throws, counting the throws during training camp. They're clearly concerned about the shoulder. And then you go back to the springtime, really the emphasis was making Cam's release more compact. And so I think there's a couple things you need to watch for. One, how much, they continue to work on it throughout training camp. And then even into the season, those fundamental periods, once you get into the season when game planning and things of that nature start to become really the biggest priority. And then beyond that, I really think the change ends up being in the style of offense they run. You just showed that full screen in terms of his accuracy on passes down the field. Think about how this offense has changed, especially with Christian McCaffrey. He had over 100 catches for a reason. The philosophy has changed, and I think there's going to be more of an emphasis to spit the ball out quickly on kind of shorter intermediate routes. And I think that's another reason you're going to see Cam really working on changing his throwing motion.
Tim, thank you. Our Panthers reporter David Newton joins us now from camp at Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. David, what can you tell us about how the Panthers will handle Cam? We heard Ron Rivera reference it and that shoulder as he continues to make his way back.
Yeah, Wendy, the first thing they learned from experience back in 2017, after Newton had surgery for that torn or partially torn rotator cuff, they came out in the first 4 days of training camp. Newton was pretty much able to do whatever he was wanted to do, and the shoulder became sore, and they had to shut him down for almost 2 weeks after that, and he was limited. He only played one series going into the regular season. Turned out okay then, but they learned from that. They don't want to go through that again, so that's why they're on a pitch counts now. They want to make sure that they just don't overdo it. Even though Newton feels like he's ready to go, ready to roll, as Rivera said, they just don't want to overdo it right now so he gets sore and he can't make it through all of training camp.
Well, and a long season. Sometimes you have to protect the player from himself. David, thank you. He may have a birthday coming up, but he's still 41 for now. And the Patriots, the reigning Super Bowl champions, begin their efforts to put last season behind them. Tom Brady and company reporting for training camp today. It is their first camp since Rob Gronkowski retired on March 26. Michael Reese at Patriots camp in Foxborough, Mass., where we will find him often this season. And Mike, I think the question for you is, what made this day different than the way the veterans have reported in the past years?
Well, Wendy, for the first time since 2009, the Patriots reported for training camp without tight end Rob Gronkowski, a player whose presence is felt even when he's not present. And that had many players talking today about what they'll miss about Rob Gronkowski.
He looks like he's having an awesome time on Instagram. So, you know, really happy for him of being able to have a great career and leave the game on your own terms. So we'll see how it works out for us.
There'll be a lot of things that we'll miss. Rob is one of a kind, obviously, on the field with what he's able to do as a player. We see that each and every week over the last 9 years. But I think, you know, his fun-loving spirit and personality and his childlike joy that he brought each and every day to the workplace, his humility, just a genuine human being. Certainly those things are hard to come by in today's time, so we'll miss that.
I mean, there's only one Gronk, man. You can't replace that personality. He's a great football player, but I say you got to play with who's out here, man.
At the end of the day, he'll do what's best for him, but, you know, anybody that comes in this locker room is always welcome with open arms, whether it's from retirement, from your eighth team, from your – like, it doesn't matter. We accept all guys. I mean, we took my brother in last year, and he struggled, you know, for 9 years in the NFL, so – you talk about a guy like Gronk coming back, I think that would be a lot easier.
You heard Devin McCourty talking there about the possibility of Rob Gronkowski maybe unretiring, but the Patriots don't seem like they're planning for that. In their locker room, they've given Rob Gronkowski's old locker to second-year receiver Braxton Berrios, Wendy, who actually could be a key piece for this offense as they figure out what they have without Gronk.
All right, no pressure, Braxton. Michael, thank you. A lot of defensive players on the move. Last season, defensive end Trey Flowers led the Patriots with 7.5 sacks. He has now joined his former head coach, or his former coach, Matt Patricia. C.J. Mosley, after his second consecutive season with 100 tackles, signed a 5-year, $85 million contract with the Jets. And then there was Dee Ford. The Chiefs defensive end was traded to the 49ers for a 2020 second-round pick. After the trade, Ford signed a 5-year, $85 million deal with San Francisco. Seahawks defensive end Frank Clark was traded to the Chiefs for a number of draft picks. Last season, Clark was one of three players with at least 10 sacks and 3 forced fumbles. And finally, longtime Seahawk Earl Thomas moved on from the Seahawks after signing a 4-year contract with the Ravens. He only played 4 games last season due to a leg fracture. Well, Earl Thomas, after 9 seasons in Seattle, his time as a Seahawk ended with some controversy. As a key member of the Legion of Boom, he helped lead Seattle to its first Super Bowl title in the 2013 season. But his dominance came with a price. After suffering a fracture in his leg in week 4, he sent a message toward the Seahawks sideline, which likely ended his tenure in Seattle. Our Josina Anderson sat down with Thomas at his home in Austin, Texas.
This is a 6-time Pro Bowler.
Watson throws down the middle. It's intercepted. It's Earl Thomas.
One of the anchors of the Legion of Boom.
Ball comes out. It's Earl Thomas.
A Super Bowl champion.
Earl Thomas, welcome back.
I just want to know off the jump, like, how anxious are you just to even start the 2019 season after missing 12 regular season games last season?
I'm very anxious. I've been preparing for this the whole summer.
I've been having a good off-season training program. I've been with the team already. I finished that spring ball, came back to Austin, had my DB week, and now I'm ready to get back to Baltimore, get this thing kicked off.
You had 9 seasons in Seattle, 6 Pro Bowls individually, 1 Super Bowl with the team, right? When would you say you felt like you were at your most happiest in Seattle?
It would have to be that Super Bowl year. From the start of training camp, all the way out to the playoffs, and then when we beat Denver and New York. And then right after that, I got a new contract. So all those events, I feel like that was my most happiest time in Seattle.
So when you think of all of that, in your own words then, why are you no longer in Seattle?
Well, it's a business at the end of the day. I think my time just ran out. You know, Pete and the front office, they didn't value me, I guess, like they used to. And I had just talked to Coach Carroll. He was saying how he was trying to get me in the plans of getting a new contract. But I got hurt the next week, and I think I hurt myself too, by my actions, getting Carter off the field.
What do you mean by that?
You know, I gave Pete, you know, the middle finger. Because I feel like he wasn't being honest with me.
What was going through your mind when they were carting you off the field and you were hurt?
Yeah, I was basically talking to Pete because I knew what happened because I've been through it before. I knew it was broke. Like when Pete came trying to like act like he, you know, concerned, I was like, you won, bro. Like, you know, just kept it moving.
So at the time that you gave him the dirty bird, he said nothing?
No, we haven't spoken.
Do you regret giving Pete Carroll the dirty bird?
I don't regret my decision. If my teammates felt like it was towards them, I regret that part. But I don't regret doing it to Pete.
Obviously, y'all won a Super Bowl together.
Right.
You went back to another Super Bowl the following year. I mean, to a lot of people looking in, that should be the best of times. So how, given all that level of accomplishment, are you guys not seeing eye to eye?
I feel like we got to walk with each other for the rest of our lives because we won a Super Bowl together. But they'll love you 1 minute and then they'll hate you the next. I feel like that was our relationship.
How? I don't understand.
It's just how it is in the game. It's just how it is. I'm not speaking for every coach.
Yeah.
That's just my experience.
But hate is such a strong word, right?
Right.
So I want you to explain
I'm not
that.
Sure. I don't know if he, I don't want to say that it would be hate. It was just, we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, like work ethic. Like sometimes I didn't want to practice, especially when they weren't paying me. I wasn't practicing like that and he wasn't feeling it. And, you know, just the gap just
widened.
Spread, yeah.
Is there any way that your time in Seattle was misunderstood?
That's a hard question. I feel like people are going to always misunderstand you if they don't know you. But I just try to give my best.
Did you feel appreciated when you were in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, the golden years, like, yeah, people was all on the Earl Thomas bandwagon. And
Area 29,
and you know, along with LOB, but it just ended. It ended different.
The Ravens will sign former Seahawks safety Earl Thomas,
a huge record-setting type deal.
This dude has earned his cash.
Ultimately, you ended up signing a 4-year, $55 million deal with the Ravens, $15 million more than you had before. But I'm curious, how did you feel like during the free agency period that you were regarded by teams other than the Baltimore Ravens?
As far as not getting picked up?
Well, it took a while.
I'm like, what is going on? Because me and Landon have the same agent. And once he got off the board, my agent called me and hung up. I was like, what? Like, what is going on?
Wait. David called you and hung up?
But I guess it was, he said it, his service got lost.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, man, what happened? Like, is he trying to shoot a slug at me? Like, what is going on? And I was going to go to KC on a 1-year deal. I had talked to Coach Andy Reid, and we had a conversation, and I committed. But then the next day, I woke up. Dave called me and said, we had a better deal. And he told me the numbers. I said, I'm taking that.
So did you call Andy Reid and say, just kidding?
No, my agents, Drew and Dave, called him.
Uh-huh.
And he was cool with it. Of course, he knew that it was a business decision.
Mm-hmm. Knew. Does Patrick Mahomes know this story?
He don't care. He got the honey badger.
Okay. So how would you say your transition is moving your life, acclimating to being a Baltimore Raven in the black and purple?
It's different from the West to the East. It's definitely different. But I'm definitely not comfortable in the meetings, especially when they put me on the spot. I'm like, bro, somebody tell me, like, I don't know.
Oh, they put you on the spot? Like, how does that work?
Well, it's just a little pressure so I can stay in my playbook. So they'll call me out. Most of the time, I don't know. Because I'm more of, right. I have to get on the field. Yes. I like to get on the field. Yeah. Let me walk through it. Let me see it a couple of times. Let me rep it out.
Yeah.
And then I'll get it.
Yeah.
And I'm stubborn. That's just my game. I know it.
Yeah.
But they'll keep me on my toes.
Do you feel like your arrival in Baltimore has been too quiet or under the radar?
That's how I like it. Mm-hmm. Like, let me sleep under the radar and just surprise everybody.
Well, that was a little bit surprising. I mean, there were a number of things in there that stood out. You know, I do think it's unfortunate people have to go their separate ways. Teams part with players, vice versa. It's too bad that he and Pete Carroll haven't spoken. And I thought that was interesting. That was one of the first more notable things that jumped out at me.
Yeah, to think, I mean, we figured that they probably had some sort of conversation after that. To think the last communication was the middle finger out on the field on national TV, something we replayed over and over and dissected and discussed. But obviously, that relationship was already over. There was already a lot of
buildup. And let me say, I don't blame Pete Carroll for not appreciating that or for not following. Really wasn't his job to follow up, in my opinion.
And I think in the long term, Earl will regret it. I mean, the reality is he's going to go down as an all-time great Seahawk. And, you know, I think the reality of having it end that way, no matter how much it hurt, there are very few people that play this game that don't get released at some point. And it hurts their feelings. And it's not something that they're used to having happen to them. But listen, Peyton Manning was cut. Okay, that's how this game works. And so I think hopefully time heals it. But I think Earl will end up regretting it.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is just, you know, Earl and Pete Carroll's relationship. They've been through so much. They won Super Bowls together. They've obviously... You know, Pete Carroll commanding that defense and them getting to know each other and them having that great relationship with the Legion of Boom and himself. It just sucks to see it go this way at this juncture of his career as well as Pete Carroll's. I'm sure they'll have a conversation one day when he gets, you know, inducted into that Seahawk Ring of Honor or whatever that thing happens. Him and Pete Carroll have to have a conversation.
You know, time heals all wounds, and I would say maybe not all, but most. Mm-hmm. And you hope that over time, because there was so much accomplished, I mean, these two, that relationship worked until it didn't, mm-hmm. which is often the case, but clearly it didn't in the end.
I think it's going to be one of the biggest, visually the oddest things to see him in a Ravens jersey of all the players on defense that have switched teams during this offseason. But when you take a look at what he's doing now, he's still recovering from a broken leg. And you know, he spoke to the rehab he went through and the workouts. And it sounds very similar to Odell when you talk to him. There is significant change in the organization that they're in. From a culture standpoint, and then from what they're actually doing on the field. So I really appreciated him pointing out that feeling he has in this meeting room where he doesn't know this defense just yet, and they're pushing him to learn this playbook quickly.
I'm not sure I'd feel great about it if I was the one writing the check.
If you sign him to a deal, it's going to pay him about $55 million mm-hmm. and pay him a lot of money in year one. I think the other thing that's interesting, and it certainly got my attention, is that basically, he was talking about having a one-year deal with the Chiefs. Okay, so we're talking about a one-year deal with the Chiefs versus a long-term deal that he got with the Ravens. And he was talking about sitting there basically unsigned, which makes you wonder who the heck else was interested in Earl Thomas at the number that he was wondering. And then the Ravens actually paid him.
Right.
And so I think that now puts a lot of attention on, will he perform? It's a 30-year-old safety, as you said, is coming off a broken leg.
But if he's 100% and playing at a high level, they know what type of player they're getting in Earl Thomas. He's going to be coming after that football. He attacks. He's a ball hawk. That's what they're expecting from him.
That's what they're expecting and hope for.
They don't have a very fierce linebacking core pass rush right now. They have a deep secondary right now in Baltimore, but this isn't the same defense he's used to in Seattle, for sure.
You would think he's incented to prove that Seattle made a mistake.
But just a little bit.
Just a little bit. All right, we'll go by the numbers right now on Lamar Jackson because we've been doing that this week with quarterbacks as they check in with camp. We're going back to school with them. Jackson took over the Ravens starting job in week 10 and led Baltimore to a 6-1 record and an AFC North division title. It was their first division title since 2012. With Jackson as their center, the Ravens committed to the run in a big way. He had 130 designed rush plays where he rushed for 580 yards, nearly double the next closest quarterback. And the rookie season wasn't all perfect, including the playoffs. He averaged 7.1 yards per attempt when facing zone. But when he faced man, those yards per attempt dropped to 4.
And there are a lot of question marks and a lot of intrigue, I think, about how he performs in his sophomore season. Now that there's a little bit of a book on Lamar Jackson, what do you expect?
He needs to develop it better as a passer. We know he's a tremendous runner. The biggest area of improvement will be as a passer, especially when you're dealing with man coverage, especially with how you're dealing with playing inside the pocket, something he really struggled at a year ago. And I think when you think about, okay, well, how can he improve? Well, it's play better on third down. I mean, so many times you see guys struggle on third down. Good example in the red zone. He's throwing a back shoulder fade. This ball should be firm and high and behind the wide receiver. Instead, it's got a little bit of, you know, kind of loft to it, and he leaves it inside, which is why this is an incompletion rather than a touchdown. Third and six, he's reading the front side of the route to his right. He's got a shallow cross coming into his line of vision that is wide open, and if the ball's a foot out in front, it's a first down for that Ravens offense. Instead, he gets sloppy with his feet, drops his elbow, and throws an inaccurate pass that ends up falling incomplete. Kind of a similar situation to that last play here. A shallow cross coming into his line of vision. He got a little pressure from his left guard. Step up in the pocket to the right. Don't drop your elbow. Complete the pass and you have a first down conversion. I just think there was too many times that he got sloppy inside the pocket. Now, in his defense, it is very hard to kind of look like Tom Brady or Drew Brees in the pocket when you just ran quarterback power, yeah, you know, on second down. That's part of the challenge, but that's part of what they're going to ask him to do.
Well, we'll continue to look at quarterbacks all week long. Thursday on NFL Live, 1:30 Eastern. We'll go at it again. This time, Baker Mayfield back to school with a quarterback as he takes over the Cleveland Browns for his sophomore season. Big expectations. Plus, Alabama head coach Nick Saban joins us in studio. He, too, has a hand in the NFL. We know that. He sent a lot of players to the next level. We'll talk about his expectations. We revisit our top story this afternoon. Melvin Gordon, who is looking for a new deal, informed the Chargers today that he will not be in camp when the team reports. It's according to our Adam Schefter. They begin practicing tomorrow. And so now the Melvin Gordon watch begins. Adam Schefter joins us now. And, Adam, we'll start right there. What more can you tell us about Melvin Gordon's decision?
Wendy, I'm told that early this morning he informed the Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn that he would, in fact, be holding out of training camp, which doesn't come as a big surprise. These sides have not been able to break through and reach some sort of contract agreement during the offseason. Gordon views himself as one of the top backs in the league and feels he should be paid accordingly. The Chargers want to pay him and have made him an offer. It's just not along the lines of what the top backs in the league make. And thus, we have the standoff that has resulted in him not showing up to training camp today with the rest of his teammates. Now, the Chargers still want to get a deal worked out with Melvin Gordon, but Melvin Gordon said that if there's no new deal in place by the start of camp, he would demand a trade. The Chargers would prefer to work out a deal, but it doesn't mean that they couldn't look to trade Melvin Gordon at some point here later this summer if this situation continues to deteriorate and the sides right now are not close to a new deal, Wendy.
And more camp news. It's that time of the year, starting with the latest on Jaguars defensive end Yannick Ngakoue also choosing to hold out.
Yeah, another no-show in Jacksonville. Another situation where the two sides have been discussing a deal and they have different opinions on the player's value and worth. Obviously, Yannick Ngakoue views himself as one of the top young pass rushers in the league, which he has been. And we've seen some of the big deals given out to pass rushers this offseason. Frank Clark, DeMarcus Lawrence. Now, again, they were franchised and they had played their way to free agency, whereas Yannick Ngakoue still has another year left in his contract. And I think that's where Jacksonville feels like he shouldn't be paid what those other top guys are right now. And Ngakoue feels, again, one of the top young talents and should be compensated accordingly. Also, Wendy, the Green Bay Packers have released former Pro Bowl defensive tackle Mike Daniels today. They tried to trade him, called around the league, tried to shop him, couldn't get anything back, and so they released him, freed up $8 million with a salary cap space. Not a good situation for Mike Daniels being released as camps are getting open. Now, he is a free agent right away. He will get to sign where he wants, and obviously he would like to play for a Super Bowl contender, and I'm sure that there will be interest in Mike Daniels.
And then some news literally just a few minutes ago, Adam, regarding an important player for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, Taylor Lewan went on Twitter and posted a video basically saying that he failed a drug test this summer. He took a substance that he didn't knowingly take, or so he said, and he's now facing a four-game suspension. Now, again, let me say this. I have been told about this and called around, and I was told that he tested positive on an A sample, but yet they still were running tests on a B sample. So, again, I'm sure Taylor Lewan has his facts straight, but the way it was described to me early this morning was that this situation was still very fluid, that there was no suspension forthcoming, and I don't know whether the players confused the facts here or not, but my understanding was he has not been suspended for the four games yet, but there's that possibility with the A test being positive and a B test not coming back yet that he very well could be suspended. It probably winds up being the end result, but it's just not there yet. Still, Taylor Lewan felt the need to come on and explain his situation and apologize to the Titans and Tennessee fans.
Shefty, thank you. I mean, if that's the case, and I'm sure Adam is correct, then maybe just wanted to get out in front of it. I mean, it does seem, if they're still waiting on a sample, then it's unlikely the suspension has been handed down.
If that's the case, then Adam knows more about it than the guy who actually is going to get suspended.
Well, it does seem
good job, Adam.
Yeah, that seems like that's the case.
And it's probably been the case before. The way it works is you give two samples when you test. And so they obviously test the first sample. If it comes back positive, they will test the second sample, you know, if you dispute it, for sure. Listen, big loss. You think about it. Kind of a decision year for Marcus Mariota and decision on Henry, the running back. And so I think that when you look at that, not having your best offensive lineman is a big problem.
It is a big problem. And again, I guess at this point you wait and see. He believes he has been or certainly will be suspended, and perhaps so, but we'll wait and watch. We stay in the AFC South, where a year ago at this time we knew a whole lot less than we know now about the health of Andrew Luck and his shoulder. Weren't even sure he could throw a football down the field. There was all that debate about what size football he was actually throwing. Well, guess what? He threw the real deal and went on to become the comeback player of the year. And guess what? Captain Andrew Luck is back, and he is good to go. He says, "Dearest mother, I have safely arrived at camp to begin basic training. Betwixt counting birds during the day and stars at night, the journey felt short. My sidearm is polished. My uniform is crisp. My neck beard full. The new campaign has officially begun. Exhilarated, Andrew." Here's the ESPN Colts reporter Mike Wells on the real Andrew Luck.
The big news out of Colts training camp on Wednesday is that general manager Chris Ballard said franchise quarterback Andrew Luck will be limited for about the first week of training camp. No, Luck does not have any problems with his surgically repaired right shoulder. It's the same calf that caused Luck to miss OTAs and minicamp during the spring. As the Colts learned in 2017 with Luck's shoulder, they want to take a very, very cautious approach with their franchise quarterback to make sure he's completely healthy for the start of the regular season.
All right, I love the outfit. Thank you, Mike. I like it. You know what? It's that time of year. It's training camp, for crying out loud.
I was saying before, he looks so hot out there. But obviously,
Victor Cruz approved?
That is training camp Victor Cruz approved.
They're
all going with like the short suits now, right?
It's a thing.
Tim knows a lot about fashion. A lot.
Expectations are high for Sam Darnold's sophomore season. Of course, the Jets considered the closest challenger, and there's some real estate there, but the closest challenger to the Patriots. The New York Jets, though, minus Quinnen Williams, who has not signed his contract, open training camp today as well.
We're going to do everything we can to make sure that when this season goes, we're progressively getting better. And that's our goal. We're going to play meaningful games in the end of November and December. That's what we're going to do.
There's enough talent on this roster to be a playoff contender, but again, like I said, for us, it's 1 week at a time mentality. You know, we got to take it like that, and you know, I'm just excited to kind of get this thing rolling, start playing games, and I think, you know, with the weapons that we have on offense, the great O-line that we have, and you know, obviously the running game that we're going to have, you know, I think, like I said, the sky's the limit for us.
Jets rookie Sam Darnold showed progress as the season progressed through weeks 1 through 13. He had his second lowest QBR in the league. From weeks 14 to 17, he threw 6 touchdowns to 1 interception, and his 81 QBR was the highest in the NFL. Here's Rich Cimini at Jets training camp in Florham Park, New Jersey.
Thanks, Wendy. The number one storyline is Le'Veon Bell. He reported to camp in good shape, according to Adam Gase, but we won't actually see him until tomorrow's practice. He's been a stranger around here because he skipped the voluntary portion of the offseason program, only made a couple of days of a cameo for minicamp. It'll be an interesting balancing act for the Jets because Bell has learning a new offense. He's got to build chemistry with his offensive linemen. And, of course, he's got a lot of rust to chip off. But the Jets don't want to overwork him. So that bears watching. Another note, Quinnen Williams, their number one pick, still unsigned. But the two sides are actively talking, I'm told. Back to you, Wendy.
Welcome back to NFL Live. The Broncos and Falcons, the only teams practicing as of today in advance of the Hall of Fame game on August 1st. 18 other teams, full squads report to camp today. Start practice tomorrow. Shelly Smith starts our whip around with the Chargers.
Thanks, Wendy. Expect to hear this often. Melvin Gordon continues to hold out from Chargers training camp. The team could fine him up to $40,000 per day for sitting out, and appears nowhere close to offering him the new contract he is asking for or to be traded. If he has gone into the season, expect running backs Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson to pick up where Gordon left off. But stay tuned, because everything in and near Hollywood, even here in Costa Mesa, is filled with drama.
After publicly demanding a trade during mandatory camp in June, Browns running back Duke Johnson did report for training camp today. Now, general manager John Dorsey said today that he's had discussions with Johnson's new agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and both sides were able to share how they felt. However, Dorsey declined to say whether Rosenhaus is still pursuing a trade on behalf of Johnson. However, head coach Freddie Kitchens did emphasize that they're not in the business of giving away good players.
When reporting on a quarterback situation like this, it's always important to follow the money. The New York Giants are not financially committed to Eli Manning beyond this season. Manning is in the last year of his deal for the first time in his career, and there's no hint the Giants are going to extend him into 2020. That means Eli Manning will be supplanted at some point as the starter, and Daniel Jones will take over. The questions are how and when.
Sal, thank you. Always wise to follow the money, if you will. Just ask Jalen Ramsey. Listen, we're following Victor Cruz today, though, and I like the particularly like the sparkle. Of
Wendy, are you following me in my car?
I am following Cruz. Why are your teeth so white? I know.
That's real life.
Victor has the controls here, and he's going to tell us which road he's going, where you're going.
Okay.
Where you're going.
I'll let you know exactly where I'm going,
Okay,
Wendy.
So start with the Giants, because you can go Highway Eli Manning, or you can take I-80 Daniel Jones.
Yes, and we heard good things about Daniel Jones. Obviously, the coaching staff likes his maturity levels, his accuracy, and things of that nature. But I'm still going with Old Faithful here. I'm going with Eli Manning, and I'm going with the bike here. See that? Me and Eli.
That's a bike for me and a bike for Eli.
Listen, yeah, I think Eli Manning is refreshed. He's reinvigorated.
He understands. You're going to ride down the highway in a bike?
It is what it is. It's a beautiful day out. But I think he's re-energized. I think he's been, he hasn't been in this position for a very long time with a quarterback competition, so to speak. So he's re-energized. He's excited, and he's ready to get this thing rolling.
Just out of curiosity, what are our other choices?
I think he had the
big bike. We got to get to that.
The little bike was for Daniel Jones to ride alongside. Hey, you just watch how I do this and learn how I do this.
Who better to learn from than a Hall of Fame quarterback, right?
Let's talk former Steelers. Obviously, Antonio Brown is now with the Raiders, Le'Veon Bell with the New York Jets. Which of these two has a bigger impact on his new team?
I'm going with Antonio Brown. I think he comes in as the number one receiver out there in Oakland. Obviously, Derek Carr is in a position where he has to play.
Here?
What I'm driving here.
See, these guys are both new to their teams, so I'm putting them in an Uber X. You know, this is an Uber X right here. So I'm putting my guy Antonio Brown in Uber. He's got to get around Oakland. He's got to figure out, so he's got to get in there. But he comes in as the number one receiver. Derek Carr's back's against the wall to play well this year. I think we'd be remiss to think that as the number one receiver, he won't get 10, 11, 12 targets a game, put up those insane numbers that he put up in Pittsburgh. I love Le'Veon Bell as well, obviously in New York with Sam Darnold, having a new weapon for him to play with, so to speak. But I think as far as production, Antonio Brown.
Diana, are you riding shotgun, or are you getting your own?
I'm not taking the Uber X. No. I can't afford an Uber X. I just go with the whatever that lower one.
Uber pool? Are you Uber pool?
Uber pool.
I did pull it once. It was so weird. But, you should do it sometimes.
I know.
So I think Le'Veon Bell is actually going to have a bigger impact with the New York Jets.
I think you should pick a car.
I think he's coming in like a bus. Oh, whoa. All right. We're coming in with a red.
We're coming in with a red Ferrari
that's been sitting in a garage for about a year. But just because you throw a little towel over it and keep it in there for a year doesn't mean that it doesn't work, right? You just open up the doors and let them out. And it just seems from what I can read based on social media on Le'Veon Bell and what he's putting out there, I think he wants to go out there and show that he did the right thing and that he did take care of his body. He is in shape and he's going to make a difference. In terms of this offense here, we know the pressure has been on Sam Darnold to show what he can do. And now this gives this Jets offense a completely different option, knowing that they've got a run game.
Yeah. Is this the Brinks truck that Jalen Ramsey came on?
I think you could put the tractor in there for Le'Veon Bell. I think I think he's going to be doing that kind of work. I think he's going to touch the ball that much. Because I just think when you look at it, you're probably talking about 20 carries a game around there. And you might be talking about 5 catches. I mean, I think they will want to have him have 25 catches or more. And so ultimately, big impact there.
Victor's over there on his bike, though.
No, Victor needs
me and Eli just hanging out.
His other finger touches
I'm going to go Eli take my pool. You and Eli cruising down the road.
I see what you did there, Wendy.
You see what I did there? All right. Jalen Ramsey followed up, and he said, if you didn't like it, we don't care. Don't take everything so seriously. Live and love life. It is easy to love life if all those bags are full of cash. So there's that. Listen, he's not the first to get creative with an arrival. His sent a particular message, but how about Antonio Brown in the helicopter? Is that mini AB there?
I love this one. Yeah, he's got the kids with him.
That's not bad.
Cool. That's just a productive way to travel. Yeah.
Exactly. That's just
cool. Are we gonna play the comparison game here? I mean, are we gonna compare? No, we don't have to, because here's the best. I love Reggie Wayne. There's the best of Reggie Wayne, and most of these are pretty good too.
The coolest one was the Indy car.
Indy car as well.
And it matches Indy 500. Indianapolis.
Ah, look at that.
I'm
about 5 years late.
Oh, okay.
Welcome.
All right, listen, welcome to the party. All right, listen, the Cardinals, one of 18 teams reporting to training camp today. You report, and then the annual pre-camp running test a short time ago. This is today. And, Victor, what are we looking at here? And I loved it.
I think coaches just want to see if you're in shape. Did you take the offseason seriously? Did you work on your body and not just go out and eat Twinkies all offseason? Like some of my former teammates may have done.
What's the dynamic here, though? Are you guys all in on it?
You understand. It's like, look, let's keep a pace. Let's keep coach happy, because that meeting after this isn't going to be fun with someone failed it.
A lot of nervous players.
Exactly.
Well, the Washington Redskins are the only three-man race for a starting quarterback entering training camp. Case McKinnon, Colt McCoy, and then the recently drafted Dwayne Haskins. Jay Gruden was asked about his team on Hard Knocks. Of course, his brother John's team, the Raiders, will be featured. He joked that they had to make the playoffs or he wouldn't be around anyway. So making the playoffs is the goal for this team. Who gives them the best opportunity? And I mean that in terms of a quarterback to do that, Diana. We'll go down the line.
Well, we know that the owner and the president of operations there went for Dwayne Haskins in this draft, hoping that he will become the future. But I think that if it was up to the football guys, those decision makers, they would go with Colt McCoy. Jay Gruden admitted that they need to make the playoffs in order for him to keep his job. And if he wants to keep his job, he wants to go with the hand, the mind, the body that knows his offense, and that is Colt McCoy, because he spent so many years and has that comfortable in what Gruden's doing.
I think I would go with Case Keenum. I think you have to go with the guy that has had the most tenure, the most understanding, the most high-pressure games in this situation. Obviously, playing in the NFC East, there's no easy games. You got the Eagles that are obviously Super Bowl contenders from a few years ago, Super Bowl champions from a few years ago. You have the Dallas Cowboys that are much improved on both sides of the field. And you have the Giants that are improving in certain areas, but obviously Saquon Barkley always poses a threat. So you got to go, in my opinion, with the guy that has the most tenure, that understands the game, and that has been in the most high-pressure situations, and that's Case Keenum.
Listen, I agree with you, Vic. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, there's one guy that's done it before. There's only one, and it's Case Keenum. And he's not far removed from a tremendous year in Minnesota where he was a huge part of the reason that they were having that type of success. And so I don't think that's what they will do, but I think we see Dwayne Haskins sooner rather than later. But I think if you were just said, hey, listen, who's going to give us our best chance to win, especially early in the season, so that we can end up a playoff team, I would start the year off.
We talked about the decision in the draft. Who's making the decision regarding the soon-to-be starting quarterback, at least right now?
Well, it's going to be Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, Doug Williams, and Jay Gruden. They're going to be all in together to decide who's going to be the week one starter. If I were to predict how I...
What if they disagree? Because it's a lot of guys.
It's a lot of people.
And we know Dwayne Haskins is Snyder's pick.
Yeah, and we know that no one in that room is going to say, no, you know, Snyder, you're wrong here, right? Because we've seen he gets his way when he wants it. But if I were to predict how I think this plays out, I think... Camp is going to come around in Richmond, and we're going to hear all different reports. We're going to have some days where Case is leading the way, some days where Dwayne Haskins took major steps. We're going to hear Colt McCoy is the most comfortable, and it's going to seem like it's neck and neck and neck and neck. And then I do believe in the end that Dan Snyder is going to be the one putting that pressure on Gruden to play that rookie.
Well, and again, it's his team. He can ultimately make the decision if he so chooses, but then it's Gruden who's got to make sure he performs to save his job. That's a tough spot, but it's sort of the way it works. The countdown to kickoff is on. We are down now to 43 days until the Packers and Bears open the NFL's 100th season on Thursday, September 5th. And Victor, the best to wear, number 43, Troy Polamalu, the 8-time Pro Bowl safety, a first-time Hall of Fame candidate in 2020.
I remember playing against him, man. He was all over the field. I remember we were just watching film and just watching him and trying to figure out who he is. And the guy was everywhere. He was hard to pick up.
Super Bowl 43, full of great plays, but none greater than the game-winning touchdown with 35 seconds left to go. Tim.
A lot of great plays in this football game. Maybe not a better throw than that one there from Ben Roethlisberger to Santonio Holmes.
It's a dime right there.
I mean, it is a great catch as well, amazing especially catch in that situation, that part of the field.
And the best 43-yard play came on Monday Night Football back in 2000. Brett Favre to Antonio Freeman for the win in overtime. They call it the improbable bobble. Al Michaels had seen miracles before.
Amazing catch.
Favre lays it up for Freeman, and it's incomplete. Did he make the catch at the 15?
Yes.
What are they going to rule? That he caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
He did what?
Green.
Well, we stay in Green Bay, and one thing is for certain, expect the Packers to run a lot of play action pass plays. Each of new head coach Matt LaFleur's last two offenses ranked in the top five in play action frequency. Last season, the Packers only used it on 19% of his pass attempts, which ranked 27th out of 32 teams. Rob Demoski at Packers training camp in Green Bay.
Wendy, the Aaron Rodgers-Matt LaFleur relationship really got underway back in March when they hung out in Arizona watching some NCAA tournament games as a getting-to-know-each-other session. LaFleur said today, however, this is not about what LaFleur's done in the past or what Rodgers has done in the past. Rather, it's about making this the best Packers offense for the two of them. In one other newsworthy item today, the Packers surprisingly let go Mike Daniels, a veteran defensive tackle just 2 years removed from a Pro Bowl, but Daniels was scheduled to make $8.5 million. And yesterday they gave Dean Lowry, another defensive lineman, a contract extension, making Daniels expendable. Wendy, back to you.
All right, what does a healthy Aaron Rodgers mean this season for the Green Bay Packers?
Well, I think a healthy Aaron Rodgers with a better defense, I think, makes them a much more competitive team. Obviously younger and faster on defense, one of the reasons Mike Daniels is gone also. Mm.
All right, Mike Daniels, of course, released today. He can now sign with any team. He's a free agent. Julio Jones in camp with the Atlanta Falcons. He wants a new deal, but today he was asked how he felt running routes.
You saw me running?
Yeah, down
there. How I look?
I think it looks pretty good. I
feel pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
I feel pretty good. I'm getting better every day. You know.
I mean, they don't care what I think.
Nah, but I mean, what it looked like, though, it got to look like something, you know.
All right, all right.
Okay.
How does it feel for you, though?
I'm great. Every day I'm getting better and better. You know, I'm doing more and more every day. Like I said, just taking it slow. Taking small strides. The organization, Q, everybody's been doing a great job. With me on the side, just, you know, let me go at my pace to get back to, you know, full speed.
Well, Jones was also asked about his contract. He said, everything you hear is false. We are keeping it, Diana, in-house. So the Atlanta Falcons at work. Gentlemen, by the end of the week, all 32 teams will be in camp. Not every player.
About that time.
Promising everybody. No Melvin Gordon, probably, but everybody else. Well, not everybody else. But.
This is a time when you get excited. The hair starts to go up on the back of your neck. You're ready to play some football. You start smelling that grass a little
bit. Really? You get excited.
I feel like I got 5 weeks of training camp.
If you want to go.
I like that attitude.
There's a conditioning test.
We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
This training camp is AC.